And also, just to clarify, a lot of our extra professional interactions happened after our treatment was over as well. So there was a lot of friendship, a lot of personal interaction that wasn't only during the time that I was working with her too. So a lot of our interactions happened post discharge. But yes, to be very honest, the only person who I engaged with to anywhere close to this degree was this person. But the other, the overarching themes of me having accessibility to that degree, or being willing to engage, or being willing to meet in these different boundaryless ways, are this person in Virginia.
Okay. But this also continued after your therapy relationship. And in the previous allegation, I remember asking, is there anyone else that you've maintained a relationship with past your therapy? Because the last one was about she moved away and you continued working with her. And I asked it, have you extended your relationship with anyone else past this? And so I don't understand how to believe any of this when you've said no, that there's no more after twice now.
I don't, again, I don't want to deny anything that is true. So I want to be very careful. My relationship with this client, I believe, had stopped by the time we were talking about the complaint that happened in last year. So I don't know if you were at the time you asked me, is there anybody else that you're ongoing? And I said no, because there wasn't, or I don't remember exactly how it was worded. I did not want to lie to the board, as I know LD said during the last screening hearing that I did. But by the time I was talking to you guys in the previous case, the contact with this client had already ceased.
Okay, thank you. That's all I had.
Other questions?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Dr. Gill. Dr. Flowers.
Okay, yeah, we're similar. I noticed in your response to the complaint, you didn't really give much of a defense. And so I'm just wondering, for example, the allegations that LD said, are you indicating indeed that they were true? Well, some examples would be they had a lot of physical contact, prolonged hugs, sitting in session, with your arm around LD, rubbing her back, touching her hand, and that many times she went to restaurants during appointments and also sometimes afterwards. Are all those things accurate? If you know, if not, are what do you feel was accurate?
Yes, I mean, they're accurate. And
okay, and yeah. I'm wondering too, from what I understand, records regarding services with this client were unavailable due to kind of a rodent invasion, you might say. How do you maintain and save records, and how long do you save them?
So these particular records were in a cardboard file box locked inside of my outdoor shed behind my house, which is also locked within a 6-foot privacy fence at the gate. So in Virginia, the statute is that I'm supposed to save records for 5 years. And when I went in December of 2018, I guess, to get my Christmas decorations out to decorate stuff from the shed, I noticed there was a hole chewed into the side of the cardboard box that had those records in the shed. Now, at the time, I did not know that there was a pack rat problem in Arizona. I didn't know that that's a thing. But they had eviscerated everything in that box. It was fecal matter. It was urine. It was chewed up everything. You know, I had heard that you can get some bad virus from, you know, contaminated rat droppings, whatever. So that was not a salvageable box. I did look at the statutes for Virginia, that, you know, about notification. If, you know, you have, records that are being transferred or that are no longer, available to a client, and, to see if I needed to notify anybody. What I found in the Virginia statutes is that, you know, unless you're going to be selling your practice or moving to another practice or someone's personal private HIPAA information is going to be transferred to someone else, in under those cases, you would need to notify a client that your information is going to be shared with somebody else. Under this circumstance, the rats weren't telling anybody, and I found them to be, you know, worse than shredded. So I didn't have a need to or an obligation to notify anybody, but those records were a health hazard.
What do you do now as far as your current practice, as far as records?
So now I have an EHR system. I use Best Notes. It's all on the computer. It has everything from my, you know, informed consent paperwork, my policies and procedures around, you know, all of the things that we talked about during the last complaint, boundaries, you know, contact, you know, I don't text clients anymore, email only, no intercession contact. If there's an emergency, there's a crisis response center here for you to use those as opposed to leaning on me for those. I'm an outpatient therapist. I meet with you in your assigned time and that's it. It's a very different looking situation now than it was, in Virginia or even last year.
Thank you.
Dr. Gill.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Padilla, thank you for being here. I think one of my biggest concerns is, you were treating someone, LD, who was apparently engaged in self-harm and at one point was pretty seriously suicidal. And did you consult or refer her to a psychiatrist for medication?
I don't recall the timing of when she was on medication, whether it was before that or after that, but she, I believe, was already under the care of somebody for medication management. LD, I may be wrong. I don't remember the chronology. I apologize. But no, I did not refer her to a psychiatrist. When
she was seriously suicidal, was there any reason you didn't consider hospitalization?
Yes. I used my clinical judgment at the time. I had known her for years at that point. I knew that she had a tendency to become very emotional about things and be very expressive about things. I, at the time, didn't think, and, you know, she feels very strongly about this, I know, but at the time, I didn't think that she was actually suicidal, that she was going to kill herself, that she was in a danger of doing that. I thought she was having a very, very hard time, and I also thought at the time that she was, I don't want to use this word, but I can't think of a better word. But I think there was also an element of testing me of, will I still be there? Will I still respond? Will I still be as engaged? And I was, and I did. And so I felt that if I can continue to maintain with her, that I'm not going to leave, I'm not going to disappear on her, I'm not going to abandon her during her time of whatever need she had in that moment, that that's what she was pulling for. Now, hindsight, wrong. She ended up going ahead and doing a hospitalization and finding that to have been very effective and very good that she did. And she and I actually processed after that how upset she was with me that I didn't hospitalize her. How could you see me in this much pain and not hospitalize me? And we had processed all of that. I explained where I was, what I thought, how I may have been wrong about it, and how happy I was that she was not dead, that she didn't kill herself. And, you know, her referring to comments that I made, like, you're mine, I didn't want someone else to take the credit for you being okay. I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to deny or defend myself against anything she is saying. And I very well may have said those words, but at the time, I believe there was a congenial behind it for me, a tone of, you know, I didn't want there to be an indication that I can't be the one to help you because I think I can. I thought I could. I felt like I was. And,
did you consult with anyone regarding this case?
I did not.
Because there was, at some point in time, there was a psychiatrist involved for medication. Right. You weren't in consultation with a psychiatrist?
I don't recall being in consultation. No.
And, it happens to be my opinion that one of the important things, particularly when there are issues of suicidality, that documenting and consulting are critical. And it's part of our ethical principle to operate that way. And I'd like to ask you about this. To me, the issue that comes to mind is countertransference. LD made a comment that you were disappointed in your not being able to want to help her when she was hospitalized. And I guess my reaction to that is, in the end, it's not about you. It's about her. She's the focus of treatment. It's not about you, what you can or cannot do so much unless it's about providing services for her. She's the focus of attention. She's the patient in need of treatment. And what I'm hearing from you, and I'd like your comments about this, is that your countertransference issues, your emotional reactions, and your emotional needs were being accessed at the expense of this patient. And to me, that manifests a lot of countertransference issues on your part. And one of my concerns is, are you still doing this? Have you addressed this issue? Are you still doing this for the patients that you see? Are you putting your needs ahead of theirs?
Thank you for that question. Absolutely. At the time, I am able to look back at that guy and A, want to shake him, and B, see a lot of holes in my development, a lot of gaps in my own needs. Absolutely. And to answer your question, am I still doing that? No. I have seen a therapist here. I have now my practice monitor who, you know, I meet with him 2 hours every other week, and it kind of feels, you know, similar to a therapy session with how much he grills me and rakes me over the coals. But my needs aren't being met by my clients. My priorities have been very much so realigned, and have been aligned with the client's needs being the ones that matter. I can, you know, analyze myself retroactively as far as what was going on in my life at the time. LD knows a lot of this because of our friendly, you know, correspondence, but, you know, recently divorced at the time, in a not great relationship at the time, diagnosed with cancer at some point in there. A lot of stuff for me was absolutely on shaky ground. And if I were to come up with some kind of reasoning as to why I might find somebody needing extra attention or wanting extra assurance or extra professional interactions, I would absolutely say that at the time I was very vulnerable to that. Now, no, I am in a very happy marriage. My cancer is under control. Other than the current issues going on in the world, I'm doing very well. I don't allow the entrances into those kinds of gaps that I used to allow, because I don't A, have those kinds of gaps to the degree I did, and B, I'm just so much more aware of how to maintain professionalism, how to maintain the ethical standards. And I have somebody watching over my shoulder for 2 hours every other week, asking me about it and watching me and reporting back to you guys about it. So I'm very much not doing that anymore.
And you're not going out to dinner with patients?
No, sir.
You're not spending time outside of your therapy hour with them?
No, sir.
So you're exercising boundaries that you did not exercise before with respect to your care and treatment?
Absolutely. I don't even, so the hugging of my clients was something that I actually did debate a little bit back then, because I had thought back to my training experiences with two different supervisors who both imposed upon me this idea that sometimes hugging your clients is good and it's okay. And so when I was willing to hug this client, that was echoing in my head. I don't hug my clients anymore. You know, I don't even, well, now with the virus, I wouldn't anyway, but I don't even recall doing a lot of handshaking with my clients. I go to the door, I open it up for them, and I say, see you next time. It's very, very, I mean, I don't like it. And this is one of the things that my practice monitor and I have worked on a lot. My natural inclination is to be friendly. It's to be not clinical and sterile in nature. I'm a very, I'm 6'5", I'm 230 pounds. I'm a big boisterous guy, and I am Mr. Jovial, friendly, happy guy. And I've had to rein that in to the point where it's even almost uncomfortable for me and unnatural for me how non that I am now. I feel sterile. I feel clinical. And what I've worked a lot on with my practice monitor is how to accept how much better of a clinician I am because of that. Because I am not overreaching, going out of the lines, out of my professional lanes like I used to. It feels better. It feels cleaner. It feels safer for both me and the clients. And it hopefully helps me to not have to keep showing up in front of you guys.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
All right, and Dr. Padilla, your practice monitor did submit two quarterly reports. The last report did mention that you had spoken to him about this complaint, and that based on this, you know, his thoughts were maybe you could use additional time with the practice monitor to continue with your development. What were your thoughts on that?
I listened to the previous complaint hearing right before me, and I heard her say things like, this is the best thing that could have happened to her. This is such an unfortunate, you know, way of it happening. But, you know, I have learned more than I learned in school, I think, in the last 1 year. And a lot of that, I believe, is to Dr. Ramirez's credit. He's a nice guy, but he does not hold back when he's telling me the things that I need to hear, a lot of which are, what were you thinking? And I'm sure if there were recordings that you could hear of those sessions, you would hear me saying a lot of times, like, I wish I could go back and shake or hit this guy, me, across the face for the decisions that I made. So I don't feel like I'm punished by my time with him. I feel like I look forward to those sessions because I feel like I'm held accountable. I feel like I'm challenged. I feel like I'm taught. I feel all of the things that I feel like I'm supposed to be getting from this. And even if you, I've said this to him, even if you didn't make me continue to see him, I would probably hire him to be my actual clinical supervisor anyway. So I am 100% in support of maintaining that requirement for sure.
Again, this is an initial review. Is there any other questions from the board members?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions for Dr. Padilla.
Dr. Mott.
Yeah, Dr. Padilla, you talk about, and I know this is an initial review, but I just wanted you to refresh my memory because I don't have the information right in front of me. Your education and training, you know, where did you go to? I know you got your degree at Argosy, but I'm thinking it's Argosy at another location.
Yeah, the Argosy, the Washington, D.C. campus.
Washington, D.C. campus. Mm-hmm. And how many years were you in school?
I got my master's there, and then I stayed there. So 2 years for the master's and then 3 years for that.
And then you did an internship?
Yes, ma'am. I did an internship in York, Pennsylvania at an in-home community-based therapy center.
Okay, and... Can you maybe just briefly talk about supervision you received?
Yes, specifically during that internship?
Oh, training.
Mm-hmm. So...
because both... it was an APA-approved program, I'm assuming.
Correct. The supervisor was an LCSW. He and I met once a week. I had one on-site supervisor... and then I had one internship supervisor that met with each of the interns at all of the different locations under the umbrella of this particular organization. So I met with Harry.
I don't need to know exactly when you met with people, but did you cover the issues that we're talking about today?
With one of them, yes. And one of them is one of the ones I was referring to about the guy who said that hugging his clients sometimes is something that he does. The other one, no. The other one did more of like a group sort of supervision of all of the interns, and there was six of us. The kind of therapy that I was providing, kind of therapeutic interventions I was providing in that internship, I was going into the homes of people. I was working with children who were at risk of being removed from the home and from the family and put into juvenile detention. And we were sort of a stopgap between that happening and not. And so I was meeting with parents in their homes. I was meeting with kids at school or at the park or at, you know, ice cream shops. I was meeting with the family as a whole at, you know, mini golf places, things like that. So the idea was a family systems, you know, maintain and improve the solidarity of the family.
What about your practicums?
Practicums. One was at a residential treatment center for severely at developmentally delayed folks, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, things like that. So intern or residential treatment. Another practicum was, again, a residential in Northeast D.C., a drug rehab program where everybody was on site. All of my training experiences were in residential or home.
So when you went into private practice and you started seeing clients did you get supervision?
I had a postdoctoral year at a group practice in Virginia, I did have weekly supervision, but it was basically, you know, you go over cases and you talk about interventions and everything sounds good, no problems. Okay, see you next week.
Yeah, it just concerns me. I mean, you know, we've now seen two different clients with similar issues, and I'm wondering how many more are going to pop up.
Yeah.
You know, you've gone through a training program that is, you know, I know what is covered in those training programs, and it's amazing that you never had pause for concern throughout this, despite the fact that you're friendly and you want to establish good relationship. It really concerns me that until these complaints came before the board, you didn't realize, and that really, really concerns me.
May I respond?
That's why I'm asking about your training, supervision. You practiced for 5 years in Virginia before you moved to Arizona. And, you know, so I'm very, very concerned. So, and I just wanted to express that. Thank you.
All right. Are there any other questions? All right. Hearing none, again, this is an initial review. We're going to have a discussion amongst the boards. We'll go into deliberation. This is a time for the board members to discuss the matter and complaint amongst ourselves. Dr. Myers, I believe you were the lead. Would you like to start the discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that we just have another issue of similar concerns that we've had in the past. I think that, I mean, I can make a motion. So I'd move that we move complaint number 20-41 to an informal interview based on ARS 32-2061E, gross negligence in the practice of a psychologist, H, failing or refusing to maintain adequate records, O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or unprofessional, DD, violating ethical standards based on 3.05 multiple relationships, and 3.04, avoiding harm, and 3.08, exploitative relationships.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just want to add, you know, I know that in some of these cases and something that's been kind of brought up, or these are things that may be getting addressed by the practice monitor currently, but I just want to add from my perspective, I'm not confident that the current terms and conditions are addressing this. And I think that there's a lot of loopholes and ability for circumstances to be manipulated. And I am concerned about current practice as well. And I just wanted to note that.
All right. And then, yes, you have a motion and a second. Any other comments? Ms. Galvin, can I ask a question? Can we ask the practice monitor to also be present at the next meeting? Would that be appropriate?
You may.
Okay. Does that need to be part of a motion, or can we just do that?
You can just direct staff to require his presence, and I'm sure he'll participate.
All right. Do the other committee members feel I would like to have the practice monitor there to talk to him specifically about his professional opinions and what he sees in regards to this situation? Is there anyone that's opposed to that? All right, so we'll go ahead and do that. So we have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion?
Just a quick question, Madam Chair. Do we know why the practice monitor wants to extend the time for supervising this individual?
Well, I think what he said in the report was that based on the new allegations that his, you know, and the concerns he thought we would have as a board, his recommendation was to extend the practice monitor and maybe, you know, do some more CE credits. And that's something we could ask him in person, Dr. Gill, when he comes to the next meeting.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. So if we can all vote, so do we have a motion and a second? All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Are there any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Doctor, you'll be hearing from our staff in regards to the next meeting, and you and our your practice monitor will be too, so you might want to let him know that.
Okay, I will do that.
Thank you. All right, we're going to move on. The time now is 11:05. I just want to do a quick check if we want to take a break, if you want to just do one more case before lunch, or do you want to do a little lunch break now? Is there any preference from my board, from the board members?
I think we need to take a 5-minute break before we do one more case.
Okay, we're going to do, let's do a 5-minute break, then let's make it, let's get back about 11:15, give us like 8 minutes, and then we will have one more case, then we'll take a lunch.
Ms. Sharif, we are supposed to be done by 2, so I think the lunch break needs to be very brief. I have a 2 o'clock meeting right on the dot, so.
All right, thank you for that.
Same with me.
And same with you. All right, perfect. Thank you, and then let's take a few minutes. There's Dr. Bohansky, and Dr. Bohansky, it was so nice to meet your boys today. Dr. Flowers, all right, it looks like we are back. I'm gonna turn on a light here. There we go, so I can see. All right, we are going to now continue with item 8C, complaint 2035. Again, just a reminder that this is a initial review, so we're just seeing if there's enough information to warrant going on to a further investigation. And I am the lead on this complaint. This is complaint number 2035, Dr. Sereta Zachariah, license 3554. From March 2017 to September 2019, Dr. Zariah worked for Vibrant Healthcare. During her employment at Vibrant, Dr. Zariah provided services to psychology patients and supervised a psychology associate, Dr. Marion Wiley. Dr. Wiley worked at Vibrant from October 17th to January 20th, where she provided services to patients under Dr. Zachariah's supervision. Dr. Wiley has a pending psychologist licensure application with the board. Dr. Wiley provided counseling services to RJ and his fiance, at least 2 sessions with the fiance and also the minor son. On January 27, 2020, RJ submitted 1 complaint against Dr. Zaya, Dr. Wiley, and Alicia Fisher, who's a counselor and a licensed professional counselor. On February 4th, 2020, the board received additional information from RJ's fiance regarding similar concerns that RJ submitted. And the allegations include or focus mostly on Dr. Wiley, that Dr. Wiley had a conflict of interest when counseling RJ's ex-wife and fiance, as they all belong to the same sorority. Dr. Wiley inquired if RJ was interested in meeting and dating a fellow therapist. He had concerns of photos of Dr. Wiley wearing a doctor's white coat that had a statement of clinical psychologist on it. RJ thought he was seeing a clinical psychologist and realized that she was not a licensed psychologist. Allegations include Dr. Wiley posting session information on Facebook, and there was also billing concerns. Following the departure from Vibrant, Dr. Zariah opened up her own practice, Lighthouse Psychology. On April 15th, the CSC board reviewed the complaint and felt they needed more information and asked to subpoena the supervisory records. Once we received the information from from Vibrant, we discovered there was no supervision contract between Dr. Wiley or Dr. Zariah that they had. They said if it signed, it would have been kept by Dr. Zariah. There were emails between Dr. Zariah and Dr. Wiley that reflected a supervisory role. And there was an informed consent that states on it that the clients would be seen by a psychologist or a psychologist intern. Dr. Zariah has responded through her attorney. She states that many of the allegations regarding Dr. Wiley who was under her supervision occurred out of the office. In regards to the billings issues, she said she reached out to colleagues and owners of similar businesses to determine how billing should be completed with an intern that she's supervising. She was given misinformation. She now knows that it's not appropriate to use her NPI number as an identifier in connection with Dr. Riley's billing, as reflected in the complaint. She also contacted the billing vendor to stop the bill, contacted Health Vibrant Health and its billing vendor to stop billing under her name and NPI number. She also had her attorney draft a letter for her signature that was sent to the insurance companies advising them of the potentially inappropriate billing, and she sent that certified mail. Dr. Zariah has taken steps to ensure she employs good billing practices, and she's completed several education credits. In regard to supervision, again, Dr. Zariah states that she reached out to colleagues about the type of supervision needed for a person who's getting ready to sit for her licensing exam and had already completed the number of hours required in supervision. She was told general supervision was acceptable to record the days such supervision took place. So she recorded it on her calendar under the name Marilyn, which we received in our documentation. And Dr. Zariah has taken continuing education credits regarding supervision now that she knows more is required. At the June 17th CSC meeting, the committee reviewed all the documentation. They acknowledge that she has done things to acknowledge some of her billing errors and had made a good faith effort to notify the companies. But in the committee decided that there was possible violations and wanted to move this to the board for ARS 32-2061-16H, failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate records, financial professional records pertaining to psychologist services to the client or patient, ARS 32-2061-16K, violating any federal or state laws or rules that relate to practice of psychology or to obtain a license to practice psychology as it pertains to psychologist rule R-426-209, general supervision, and ARS 32-2061-16DD, violating the ethical standards adopted by the board as pertains to 7.06, assessing student and supervisory performance, and 10.02, therapy involving couples and families of the American Psychological Association Ethical Principles of Psychology. And that concludes my summary. RJ, are you here today?
Is it complaint?
Okay. And is JW here also?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'd like to give you an opportunity to, RJ, if you'd like to make an opening statement.
Okay. Yes, from the last CSC, I was concerned about the statements from Dr. Z in regards to supervision and in regards to the billing practices of Vibrant Healthcare. What I ended up finding out and what was brought to my attention, Dr. Z currently has an active complaint filed in the Superior Court, and it was signed by her under penalty of perjury on November 27th, 2019. Dr. Z states in Section 27, Items V and W, that Vibrant Healthcare improperly allows, authorizes, and permits practice of certain unlicensed staff members without proper licensure and supervision. Also, in item W, Dr. Z states that Vibrant Healthcare improperly allowed, authorized, and or promoted the practice of charging clients and their insurance carriers for work of certain unlicensed staff members without proper licensure and supervision. That concerned me because I have been billed the way that my statements were submitted to the board since 2017 for 20 plus claims. I reached out to Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona and for the claims that they could actually go back and view. They are looking at 20 plus claims right now, and they've had questions back and forth with me, and they did admit they did receive a letter from Dr. Z. one of the biggest questions I have is Dr. Z and Dr. Wiley's supervision was not really sketchy, but it wasn't that well documented. And my concerns were the numerous ICD-10 codes that were placed on all of my bills for diagnoses when the billing was submitted and from the billing that I have. And the issues that I have is these diagnoses that were placed on my billing statements, were they valid? Did Dr. Z actually look at anything dealing with this? I'm concerned because in the last CSE, Dr. Wiley was very quick to try to diagnose me in session and say that I was, and there was no closing care that was provided to me, and I've had to seek out and find another therapist on my own. I'm just really concerned about the fact that it seems like in regards to Dr. Z, Dr. Wiley, and Vibrant Healthcare, that they're treating this really lightly when it comes to her supervision. They're treating it really lightly when it comes to billing, because this is not a new thing. They've been doing this for years, and hence the reason why not only do I have a claim, active claims of billing fraud with Blue Cross Blue Shield, JW is going to go ahead and speak about hers as well, and she has the same situation, but hers actually progressed further than mine has. Mine is still currently under investigation.
All right, thank you. Before JW speaks, committee members, do you have any questions for RJ? All right, hearing none. JW, did you want to make some comments?
Yes. So with my billing statements, when I saw Dr. Wiley on July 26, 2019 and July 29, 2019, I was charged a copay $30 per session. So when I looked at my billing statement, I realized that my insurance, United Healthcare, it wasn't billed with United Healthcare. So I called Vibrant Healthcare and spoke with the secretary, Gabriella, and she didn't know why my insurance wasn't billed. So she followed up with the billing department, and then she called me back and told me that basically it was considered a discrepancy and just look at it as a discount on therapy sessions. So then I followed up with United Healthcare, and they basically investigated the two sessions, and they looked Dr. Wiley up, and they saw the MPI number was attached to Dr. Ceretti. So they investigated and they did a final settlement. And basically, Rhonda Santos was the investigator and said that it was identified for services outside of scope of service or license. And that basically that they were seeking settlement and getting their payments recouped.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for JW? All right, hearing none. Thank you both for participating today. We're going to now move to Dr. Ceretta, and you're here, I believe, with your counsel. If you could both introduce yourselves for the record, thank you.
Great, and members of the board, my name is John Auger, and I represent Dr. Ceret Zechariah. The Complaint Screening Committee found it easiest to perhaps refer to as Dr. Z as the complainant had, and she doesn't have any problem with that. If anybody chooses to refer her to that way. And Dr. Z is sitting next to me today.
Yes, hi, I'm Sarah Zakaria.
Nice to have you here, thank you. Would you like to make any opening comments, either one of you?
Yes, I'd like to begin. And then I think Dr. Z would like to answer any questions that any members of the board have after that. First of all, Dr. Z has done anything but take the allegations that have been made against her and her license lightly. This has been before the Complaint Screening Committee two times now. She has submitted not only an initial written response with attachments, but two supplemental responses with attachments that we believe are completely responsive to all of the allegations that have been made. As members of the screening committee may recall that While all of the allegations here, or at least the issues of concern, as I understood them for the committee, were twofold, neither of which she had complete control over. One of them was billing issues, and the other was the supervisory issues. And I'd just like to address both of those briefly here. I think that those issues can be shoehorned into the violations that the board is considering today. But when they are looked at as for what they are, it is given Dr. Z's recognition of the problems and the mitigation that she has undertaken to remedy them, I think you look at the allegations, and it sounds like perhaps there's more there than there truly is. Regarding the billing issues, there is, as the committee is aware, members of the committee, an active complaint in litigation between Dr. Z and Vibrant Health, arising out of a separate business relationship. A complaint was filed by her lawyer, Tim Casey, that was signed by him, that has certain allegations in it that relate to what Dr. Z believes is going on at Vibrant Health at the time. Regarding we have not had an opportunity to address that. I don't believe that it's been raised before the Complaint Screening Committee or the board. It's a case in active litigation. The allegations are, there has been no judicial determination of any of the allegations that are in the complaint. And frankly, as folks may know, who have had experience in commercial litigation, there is mud being thrown in various directions here over which Dr. Z doesn't have a complete control. But with regard to the billing, Dr. Z billed in good faith for Dr. Wiley's time, or at least Vibrant Health billed for it. And I think that that's an important distinction here. Vibrant Health is its own corporate entity. It had its own billing agents. It had its own outside billing systems that it used to bill for patients' time and clients' time. The patients here received a bill that indicated that Dr. Wiley was the person that was providing their services, and they consented to that in the consent that they signed in order to get those services. And there's no dispute about that. So to the extent that there is a billing issue at all, it exists in perhaps the use of the MPI number on the bills that were submitted to the insurance companies. As Ms. Shreve noted, when Dr. Zachariah identified this as a potential issue, once things began going south between her and management at Vibrant Health, she got on the ball and looked into it. She had some concerns that Dr. Wiley perhaps had been there too long, perhaps things needed to happen in terms of the billing arrangements. And when she identified an issue with the NPI number, she immediately notified all of the, not only her own, not only Vibrant's billing agent, but every single health insurance provider that was billed. And not one insurance provider has responded to her certified letter that, with the exception of Medicare. Medicare responded well over 6 months ago now, and we have not heard back. She has not heard back from Medicare, and it appears as if all of the healthcare providers found that the way that the billing went was justified, was within the ordinary type of billing that they see. Dr. Z, on behalf of Vibrant, offered to audit or asked them to audit their billing and offered to refund any money that they thought had been improperly billed. And no one has responded to that offer. With regard to the IDC codes, today's the first day we have heard anything about anybody thinking that the services were improperly billed for. It's impossible for us to respond to whether or not the services of that Dr. Wiley were appropriately identified under the IDC codes. But Dr. Z has no reason to believe that at least the nature of the services that were billed for were anything other than what the codes provide for. And We didn't hear from either of the complainants that they, in their apparently pretty wide-ranging investigation since the last complaint screening committee meeting, have found that there is anything improper there, and they have access to all of the billing records and all of the billing codes and all of the and all of the treatment notes that they could match up to see whether or not that's appropriate or not. I should note that Dr. Z has taken over 30 continuing education credits since these issues were brought to her attention, roughly 50% of which are related to firm management and billing. She's not been with Vibrant for a long time. In her own practice, she plays extremely close attention to billing issues to make sure that billing is appropriate and proper. And she meets with her billing agent at least once a week in order to make sure that those things happen. And aside from this issue with Dr. Zachariah, there's no indication that with Dr. Wiley, there's no indication that Dr. Zakaria has had a billing issue with any other patient in any other type of setting in the past. With regard to supervision, again, this is an area that Dr. Z understands is a legitimate area of concern for the board, and she believes that her documentation of her supervision could have been better. The nature of the supervision that she provided was what you would normally expect under these circumstances. She's meeting approximately weekly, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less, with Dr. Wiley. They are discussing her patients, and as any clinical supervisor is entitled to do, she's entitled to trust what Dr. Wiley has to tell her about her patients. And there's no dispute here, again, that almost all of the things that happened that are alleged in connection with this sort of tawdry affair involving Dr. Wiley, they were all out of office things. And so as much as Dr. Z may have wanted to probe Dr. Wiley about the nature of the care she was providing to the patients and the way in that care was being provided, there's only so much you can do. You know, Dr. Z doesn't have an obligation to check out Dr. Wiley's Facebook or to probe whatever other social media contacts she might have to see whether or not patients are potentially involved. And as it was pointed out at the last complaint screening committee meeting, even if Dr. Z had reviewed all of the patients by name, she would not have likely tumbled to the conclusion that there was some interrelationship there with the patients simply based on their names. There would be no way for someone to be able to do that based on name alone. Dr. Z really wishes that she had documented better the supervision that she provided, and she understands that that's an important thing to do, especially with somebody who is unlicensed, even though Dr. Wiley had more than satisfied the hours necessary for licensure before she ever began her supervision with Dr. Z. Nonetheless, it's important to document that supervision, and Dr. Z knows that now. And as part of those 30-plus CE credits that she's taken since this was all brought to her attention, about roughly half of those are related to patient supervision and the documentation that is required for patient supervision, and not only for the type of supervision that you provide in person, but also now for telemedicine supervision, which is, certainly a large part of almost everybody's practice, I imagine. That is not taking the situation lightly. She has acknowledged the problems that existed at Vitalant. Those problems are going to exist for that company for a while. They clearly have some problems if you look at the allegations of the civil complaint, but that's not the issue that we have here. So Dr. Z is hopeful that that the board understands how seriously she's taking this, that the board appreciates her acknowledgement of the problems that these issues in her practice create and have the potential to create, and also appropriately recognizes the mitigation that she has taken in order to resolve these problems and ensure that none of this is ever going to happen again or be associated with the practice she's currently engaged in. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Board members, questions for Dr. Z? I do have a question. Dr. Z, I just want to confirm, did Dr. Wiley at all talk to you about the connections between these clients? RJ, his fiance, and his ex-wife all belonging to the same sorority or knowing each other? I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, speak up.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. I did know that RJ and his son were being seen, but I did not understand the interconnectedness of all of this or was even aware of it.
All right. Are there questions from the other board members?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have several questions.
Dr. Flowers.
Yes, Dr. Zakaria, thank you for attending. There are several issues here. I think a lot of them have been addressed already. One of the key issues I'm concerned about is what your responsibilities were in regards to the supervision of Dr. Wiley, whether there was any kind of written supervision agreement, information given to clients regarding her status and your connection with her, those kind of things. The sense I get is your attitude or understanding maybe was, she's done her internship, she's done her postdoc, therefore I don't need to do a whole lot to check on her. Can you offer some information in response to that?
You're absolutely right. One thing that I've learned in this incredible process is I have to be very careful who I reach out. It was pointed out at one of our other meetings that everyone may think they know what they're doing, but it doesn't mean that they are doing what is required and acceptable. Since then, I have identified the consortium here who I can reach out to, who I actually have on another case, and a couple of other individuals who clearly are a lot more knowledgeable about this. And I've learned a lot about who to reach out to through the different CE courses that I've taken through ASPA. As far as patients knowing that Marilyn was under my supervision, Marilyn told them. She was instructed by me. I was in the office when these conversations sometimes happened as well. She stated very clearly that she was under my supervision. The front desk person, Roxana, was also instructed to inform patients of this. I had actually also heard her share this in person and over the telephone. And the informed consent that the patient signed also explained that they would either be seen by myself or Marilyn, maybe not with our names in there, but as psychologist and psychology associate or intern. Was that sufficient? Was there sufficient documentation that informed verbal consent, verbal informed consent was also put there? Maybe not enough. I can tell you that that has been severely rectified. In fact, most of my sessions now that are done through telehealth, the very first question is verbal informed consent and what was discussed and what was went over again. So I have attempted to make sure that a situation like that cannot happen again where there are questions.
Yes, I'm wondering too, depending on the nature of the supervision, when there's an unlicensed person practicing under supervision, the supervisor takes responsibility for the care of the clients. Was that your understanding as well?
It was. So we would discuss cases, and when there were issues that were difficult, I would even come in to some therapeutic settings if that was required of me. I would always ask, are there issues I should be aware of? Is there anything you need to raise with me? And I have to be honest with you, the way I document all my supervision now is night and day. Not only do I have my listed dates of meeting, but I have a sentence or two under each one. I also now have my interns provide me monthly with their individual ones and their notes so that we can have accountability and make sure everything matches up and see that even the competencies match up and everything that we're working on. So I've learned a lot in this process, and I take a lot of care now to ask different questions as well so that I can be more informed.
So from what I understand then, you know, we saw calendar entries about supervision, but as far as what was discussed, clients discussed, there are no records from what I can tell.
There are no available records. There may have been some in the beginning. They were all with Vibrant in their Dropbox. Again, I cannot attest to what is there now and what is not there now. They are saying there are no records, so there are no records.
Okay, well, I guess what I'm saying is, though, did you actually have such records?
I had a couple here and there, but not extensively enough. That's what's changed.
Okay.
I have extensive, in-depth records now, and not only is it kept in the place of employment, but I have my own set so that if I ever do separate from something, I still have access to all of that. It won't be, well, are there records or are they not? Where are they? Where have they gone? So that was another thing that I implemented to make sure that I do not find myself in this position again.
Okay, then a couple other questions here. And Ms. Galvin, you can, you know, if this is inappropriate to ask, please so note. But some allegations were that you inappropriately transferred $8,700 from the company to your own account, and that you removed electronic copies of folders when you left. And, you know, that's also concerning. Is that something that you're handling through civil matters, or how is that working?
If I may address that, those are allegations that are being made by Vibrant in connection with a civil lawsuit. Dr. Z denies that she ever inappropriately did anything inappropriate in connection with the management of that company. Certainly, she did not embezzle money. And to the extent that she, that there is evidence that she reviewed client files, there's clearly computer evidence of that because she was interested in reviewing her clients' files from time to time. And she'd be happy to answer those questions. We're not playing hide the pea here, but I just want to make it clear that there is no evidence that any of this happened in terms of a transfer of $8,700 that was inappropriate. As regards to the patient records, she would be able to even better address that than I.
Since I opened my new private practice, Lighthouse Psychology, I have a steady stream of patients. Not a single one of them is from Vibrant Healthcare. I have not taken a patient from there. I have no need to download people's charts. Things are kept on EHRs right now. But again, the only thing I can tell you is if I had downloaded all those charts, I'm pretty sure I would have reached out to all those patients to please come and see me in my new practice. I have not done that, and there is not a single patient from Vibrant Healthcare that I am currently seeing to date.
Okay, yeah, they were, you know, kind of suspecting that you electronically removed client folders that they've been seeing to kind of maybe take them for your next business, but apparently you're saying that did not happen.
No, I did not happen. Vibrant Healthcare is an integrative practice, meaning there are different medical specialties there. Many people had access to all the charts. There would be no reason for me to download them or, Yeah, there would be no reason. And to be very honest, at that point, I wouldn't have even known how to do it. Because that's one of the other things that was very evident when I started Lighthouse Psychology, that I needed better training in the EHR so that I could actually know what was being put where and how. And I went through an intensive 6-week training with the actual practice fusion reps to learn all of this. So prior to that, I don't even know that I would have known how to download the chart, to be very honest with you.
Okay, thank you for your answers.
Madam Chairman.
Dr. Bohansky.
A couple quick questions. Doctor, are you currently supervising interns, students, postdocs?
I am.
Does the consent to treatment indicate to the patient how to reach you as supervisor should they be concerned?
Yes, it does.
Does it list you on that consent to treatment as the supervisor?
It does.
By name?
By name.
Okay. And that each patient who's seen by a trainee then signs a consent in which they are able to take home that has your name and number on, should there be a problem?
Yes. And the other thing that I've implemented is I check in with each patient now.
Okay.
So that
excellent.
They see my face as well.
And that was not true in the Vibrant days, but that's true in the Lighthouse days.
Exactly. And on my telebehavioral health addendum form, there's even a place to check where the intern says, I have shared with the patient that I am working under the supervision of Dr. Z. So we have all of that involved.
What level trainees do you have?
What level? I have a couple pre-doc and a couple who are actually post-postdoc but are continuing to work and get the experience.
So
they have their hours. They have their hours that they need, just like in Marilyn's case. But their documentation for supervision looks exactly like the documentation for the interns.
And what do they call themselves?
They call themselves psychology interns, psychology associates, depending.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Dr. Zahari. Yeah. When I'm looking at the medical records from Vibrant, when Dr. Wiley provided the session, it's electronically signed by her, but not by you. Is there any documentation that you were signing off on her work or that you reviewed her work?
That's a very interesting point that you bring up. I don't know how to answer that other than Dr. Wiley would see the patient. And when she was done, I would go in, I would read the chart, I would sign it, and then I would sign the charge slip. So I don't know why that didn't translate. Again, I am...
You're saying you signed every... You electronically signed every progress note?
I electronically signed every progress note and every charge slip that was going to be sent to the billing company to acknowledge that I signed the progress note and then that. We couldn't send the progress note to the billing company without my signing, because my understanding at the time is I was a supervisor and it was my MPI number, which may be part of the reason why initially I did not realize that they were putting the MPI number under Dr. Wiley as well. Again, lack of knowing the system, and that's been absolutely rectified through 6 weeks of training.
And so currently you sign off on every note?
I still sign off on every note, yes.
Okay, that's all I had. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? All right, hearing none, thank you, Dr. Z, for participating today. The committee's now going to go in deliberations. This is a time when we deliberate the issue amongst ourselves without interruption. I will start the deliberation. I think that there's definitely some violations of this rule of our statutes and rules. I think that Dr. Z has done some good faith effort in trying to reconcile some of it regarding the billing, contacting the insurance companies. I mean, he's taken a lot of CE credits, but in regards to, do I think there are some concerns with what happened? Yes, and I would actually recommend the same motion that was in the CSC, but that's how I feel. What does everyone else think? Any other thoughts, comments?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes, Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I'm concerned about a number of things. A key one to me is the supervision of the trainee. It appears to have, we don't know how well it was done because we have no documentation or training agreement, but it appears to have possibly led to some bad outcomes for some clients.
All right, thank you. Any other comments?
Madam Chair, this is Dr. Gill. I agree with what you're saying, and I would be in support of considering for a motion the violations that were passed along to us from the screening committee. Thank you.
All right, I'll make a motion that we move this forward to the next level at impossible violation of ARS 32-2061-16H, failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate records, financial or professional records pertaining to psychological services provided to a client. ARS 32-2061-16K, violation of federal and state laws or rules that relate to the practice of psychology or to obtain a license to practice psychology as it pertains to a psychologist, rule R4-26-209, general supervision. And ARS 32-2061-16DD, violations of ethical standards adopted by the board as it pertains to sections 7.06, assessing student and supervisory performance, and 10.02, therapy involving couples or families of American psychological and ethical principles of psychologists and code of contact.
Madam Chair, this is Jennifer. I just wanted to clarify for this matter with regards to 16K violation as relates to the R4-26-209 rule for supervision. Ms. Galvin may want to interject me, but I'm not sure if this rule is applicable, as that rule is for the 3,000 hours of supervised professional experience, which was provided by different supervisors, not Dr. Z.
Okay. Dr. Ms. Galvin, you affirm that you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I don't think that rule is applicable.
Okay. Then I will make the amendment to my motion to remove ARS 32-2061-16K from that motion. So we got a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, remember to unmute.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, hearing none, motion passes. You'll be, both parties will be hearing from our board in the near future in regards when this item will be placed on the agenda again. Thank you. We're gonna now move to item 19, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding complaint number 2036 for Marilyn Wiley, and on pending psychologist applications from Marilyn Wiley, including the possible denial of the same. I am the lead on this. I'm going to provide a background. Dr. Wiley, in 2017, Dr. Wiley obtained a PhD in psychology from Walden University. She has a current psychologist application pending with the board. She previously applied for licensure with the board on two occasions, but has not passed the ECCC from October 17 and January 2020. Dr. Wiley worked as a psychologist associate for Vibrant Health. Dr. Wiley provided services to patients under the supervision of a licensed psychologist, Dr. Shredda, Zachariah. Dr. Wiley, please note that her hours needed for supervision were already obtained before she started working for Vibrant. Dr. Zariah's employment with Vibrant terminated in September of 2019. Dr. Wiley continued to work till January 2020. Dr. Wiley represents that upon Dr. Zachariah's departure from Vibrant, she transitioned to providing life coaching services at Vibrant and no longer practiced psychology. In January 2020, while Dr. Wiley's application was pending, RJ submitted one complaint against Dr. Wiley, Dr. Zachariah, and Angela Fisher. The complaint alleged, and also there's a complaint from the fiance, which we just heard from too, alleges that they were, let me just wait one second. They provided therapy to RJ at Vibrant, and prior to providing therapy to RJ at Vibrant, she provided life coaching with RJ in her prior practice. The complaint alleged that while RJ was in Dr. Wiley's care, that Dr. Wiley inquired if RJ was interested in meeting and dating a fellow therapist. RJ stated that he declined the invitation of the counselor's advances, but was unsure how Dr. Wiley, who was his therapist friend and Facebook friends, were going to feel when he turned down the counselor. Dr. Wiley's text messages complicated the therapist relationship, which caused RJ to schedule fewer sessions. RJ was concerned that Dr. Wiley was not using the proper national provider identification number. RJ's review of the billing statements had Dr. Zariah's NPI number. RJ says he never met Dr. Zariah in all the sessions that he conducted with Dr. Wiley. He's concerned that Dr. Wiley is not a member of the APA, not licensed, and RJ cannot find any life coaching certification on her. He also had questions about pictures of her where she's wearing a doctor's coat which appears to have on it Dr. Marilyn Wiley, clinical psychologist. RJ was under the impression he was seeing a certified and capable trained professional. Dr. Wiley also provided counseling services to his ex-wife. Dr. Wiley is good friends with his ex-wife, as the ex-wife brought her into the sorority, which is also the same sorority as RJ's fiance. RJ took the fiance, Dr. Wiley took the fiance as a patient, even though they feel now it was a conflict of interest. Dr. Wiley intentionally did not bill fiance for two sessions. Dr. Wiley's response states that she has an extensive history with RJ, and they first met him in 2017 when his ex-wife, whom RJ still married at the time, brought RJ in for life coaching sessions. RJ started his own life coaching sessions to discuss various things with Dr. Wiley. RJ never inquired about Dr. Wiley's degree. Life coaching was never meant to be or to substitute for therapeutic care. As the life coaching sessions went on, RJ began to contact Dr. Wiley more frequently. This was a time when she was looking at getting into working for Vibrant. She states that she spoke to Dr. Zachariah regarding bringing in RJ as a client, and that it was agreed they could. RJ asked if he and his children could see Dr. Wiley at Dr. Wiley at Vibrant. Dr. Wiley said that the lab coat that she was wearing, she did not realize at the time she couldn't have a clinical psychologist. It was a gift from her father and has since not worn it. And that pretty much summarizes the complaint. It went to the CSC board on April 15th, 2020. The board determined that there are possible violations of ARS 32-2061-16G, engaging or offering to engage in as a psychologist in activities not congruent with the psychologist's professional education, training, and experience. ARS 32-2061-16O, providing services that are unsafe or unnecessary, or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards. And ARS 32-2061-16DD, violation of ethical standards adopted by the board as it pertains to section 3.05, multiple relationships, 310, informed consent, 405, disclosures of the American Psychological Association ethical principles. And also ARS 32-2061-16DD 3.11, avoiding harm. And that concludes my summary. RJ, are you also still on the phone?
Yes, I am.
All right. And JW?
Yes.
All right. RJ, would you like to make some opening comments?
Yes, ma'am. Well, yes, ma'am. Thank you. First, I'd like to go ahead and state that I have never known Dr. Wiley as nothing but other than Dr. Marilyn Wiley. She has always been a clinical psychologist. She has never been an associate nor an intern ever in any professional situation. Dr. Wiley has misrepresented her credentials in multiple mental health care forums, mostly focusing on the African American community. She participated in an event called Stiletto Talks, a sip and shops soiree, and other events that targeted African Americans with mental health, along with a vibrant healthcare kids mental health care camp in 2018, which ironically, on the vibrant healthcare website, she was pictured in her infamous lab coat with clinical psychologist written right across in the ad on the vibrant website, all while she was employed by Vibrant Healthcare and allegedly under the supervision of Dr. Z. Dr. Wiley, on her own Facebook page, gists multiple Maricopa Chick, Dr. Rock Ramsey, and her latest page, I Am Dr. Marilyn, continues to friend patients and use her social media as a selling tool to gain more patients. She has absolutely no respect for blurring and creating multiple relationships, as it has been good business for Dr. Wiley and Vibrant Healthcare in the past. Dr. Wiley, actually on her own Facebook page, brags about having firearms in a clinical setting, even taking a picture with her own concealed firearm in her then Vibrant Healthcare office. It's commonplace that Dr. Wiley creates dual, plural relationships by inviting patients like myself and JW and others out to her Maricopa home for barbecues, pool parties. And when I was a patient, along with JW, she invited us out and her boyfriend to the Cheesecake Factory in Chandler to celebrate her birthday, just the four of us. And the interesting topic of conversation was my ex-wife, TDJ, and how I upgraded from TDJ and her new boyfriend, who Dr. Wiley also saw as a patient. Dr. Wiley shared my session information with TDJ and other members of their sorority, Sigma Gamma Rho sorority. And interestingly enough, I was served with an order of protection, of an order of protection that, along with TDJ and another member of Sigma Gamma Rho, alleged and wrote in a statement detailing a diagnosis from Dr. Wiley saying I was currently off my medications, depressed, manic, violent, and suicidal in hopes of keeping that order of protection enforced against me. Luckily, the court saw through their actions and it was immediately dismissed. Dr. Wiley's numerous HIPAA, which I've reported, confidentiality violations in regards to sessions provided and gave great ammunition, true or false, and that information almost led to my termination of employment. Dr. Wiley would brag on her Facebook page how she is so trusted for confidentiality that she even has ministers as patients. And that part is actually true, because thanks to our ABC News interview with Dave Biscobing, one of the ministers reached out to me, and he did not have any idea that she was licensed, and he was wondering why did she just up and disappear all of a sudden. Dr. Wiley has been the therapist for many other members of the children and members of Sigma Gamma Rho, including my sons, both of them. Dual relationships mean nothing to Dr. Wiley and Vibrant Healthcare. Please know that Dr. Wiley is not remorseful. In the weeks leading up to this board meeting, Dr. Wiley continued her attacks on myself and JW. Even before the 415 CSC meeting, she made threats towards myself, JW, and Mr. David Biscobino of ABC News 15 in regards to that interview segment. Because of those actions, police reports were filed on behalf of myself and JW, along with ABC News 15 for the Phoenix and Chandler Police Department. The most detrimental thing is Dr. Wiley, via her Facebook page on April, and I'm about to finish up, on April 11th, where she stated, "People think because you avoid drama, you scary." And she made sure to say this part, "Ma'am, sir, I'll kill you." That was her direct statement on her Facebook page. And ironically, after she made that statement, the first person who responded back loving that statement, a statement of threat, was TDJ herself. This is no accident. This is no coincidence. This woman is dangerous. And what she's doing is a threat because there's no remorse in what she does. And I hope the board looks at this not as a one-off thing, that this is something that needs to be treated very seriously, and people should not do this. In a time of COVID, in a time of stress, people are seeking out therapy more than ever, and especially in the African-American community. To have one of our own victimize their own is just horrific. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for RJ? And then JW, thank you for being here. Also, did you have any comments?
Yes, just basically just reiterating what we went over in the last CSC meeting when I saw Dr. Wiley in office for the two sessions back in July. You know, we discussed personal issues regarding my relationship with RJ, and also she also expressed issues regarding the marriage that terminated between RJ and TDJ. And she also expressed about how he had anger issues and that he threatened to grab his gun and turn the gun on TDJ or himself, and how the youngest son, DJ, basically stopped him from doing that. Also, we expressed issues that I had regarding my sorority, about me being hazed in 2008. And she reassured me that everything will be confidential and that anything that we discussed in the session is between us, and that her job was not to judge people. But there's been other events that's happened otherwise to, you know, basically say that that was a lie. She has a history of sending personal text messages. October 2019, she basically asked if me and RJ got married in Amsterdam because the ex-wife TDJ wanted to know. So that's when I felt like red flags were coming up, and I said, let me just distance myself from everything. Also, with the billing statements, when I called Vibrant Healthcare regarding my billing statements and I wasn't charged, like, through United Healthcare, they didn't charge my insurance. And then I followed up with United Healthcare, and then they investigated everything, and then they got their money back through the settlement. So it's just been a lot of things that's happened. Very stressful.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments. Are there any other, are there any questions?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes, Dr. Gill.
Flowers.
Dr. Flowers. Everybody just shifted on my Zoom screen. So now I'm not sure where we're at.
Yeah, he may want to ask questions as well. Okay, and maybe I want to ask questions to Dr. Wiley.
Okay.
Basically,
we're not. We're not. We're not asking questions, Dr. Wiley, yet. Any questions for JW?
Okay. All I can say is thank you for your participation. You've been very vocal and very instructive, and I wish you the very best. Thank you.
Good comments. All right. Hearing no other questions for RJ or JW, we're going to now move to Dr. Wiley, and I do believe she's being represented today.
Is that That's correct. And that's correct, Madam Chair.
Mr. Lackey?
Yes.
If you could both introduce yourselves for the record, and then if you'd like to make an opening statement, then we'll probably follow up with questions with Dr. Wiley.
Sure. Carrie Lackey, I'm the attorney for Dr. Marilyn Wiley, who is appearing before the board via Zoom.
And Dr. Wiley?
Yes, I'm Dr. Wiley. I just want to say thank you guys for your time and attention to this matter, and it is a very serious matter. I was told that I was treating as it wasn't, but I understand that this is a serious concern, and thank you.
Thank you. Do you have some opening comments?
Yes, Madam Chair and the board, thank you for allowing us to speak. Just, I'll try to be brief, which is a famous term from lawyers that go overboard, but I will try my best to be brief here. I do echo what my client said, that she is taking this seriously. I understand that she appeared before the board at the previous CSC without the benefit of counsel. Since that time, she has retained me. We've talked about this this matter at length. She is taking it very seriously. It's had an impact on her, physically, mentally, emotionally. And it is. It's a very serious matter, and she understands that. Getting into, and I understand, again, that this has been before the board. Dr. Wiley has responded to the specific allegations, but I just wanted to make it clear Dr. Wiley's position about purportedly holding herself out as a clinical psychologist always and since the beginning. And that's simply just not true. And she denies that. I listened to Dr. Z's presentation here, and she said a couple of things that I think are relevant to Dr. Wiley's position here. Number one, that the supervision could have been, supervision of Dr. Wiley could have been better. Putting that aside for a little bit more, one of the specific allegations was that that the complainants never knew that she was being supervised by Dr. Z and was not a clinical psychologist. And I believe Dr. Z herself said that Marilyn told them. And so there was no secret there. With regard to some of the billing issues, I think it's clear that Dr. Wiley didn't have any authority with regard to billing issues at Vibrant. As a matter of fact, she doesn't even have an NPI number. So, that can be kind of set aside. So as far as interpersonal conflicts, ethical conflicts that may have arisen in this case, I can tell you that it's our position that a lot of that had to do with the lack of supervision. I think this can be corrected. I think that Dr. Wiley has a lot to offer to folks, not only in the African-American community, but also in the community at large as a professional once she meets the requirements. But she and I agree that, and she would be willing to take any type of ethics courses through CE or any type of board-approved ethical courses that can address some of these issues. And with that, I'll conclude, and we can answer any questions that the board members may have.
Great. Thank you. As the lead, I think I'll start with some questions. Dr. Wiley, did you send RJ a request through text or other any other means to see if he's interested in dating a fellow therapist?
Yes, I did. I sent the message, but I didn't ask. But yes, I did. I screenshotted what she sent me, and I just forwarded it to him.
Okay. And did you know that both the fiance and ex-wife are part of the sorority?
Yes, I knew.
And the sorority is a pretty tight organization?
Yes, it is.
And what did you speak about, you know, what are the boundaries issues or conflict of interest?
Yes, I did. And when they first asked me, I said no. And she came to see me anyway. And I submitted to the board text messages where I said I could not see her. And she came anyway. And when she left, I told the front desk not to charge her because it was a consult. And then she came back a second time. And that time she recorded the conversation without my knowledge and submitted it to the board saying that it wasn't a therapeutic conversation. It was more of gossip, which it was, because I had already told her that I can't see her in a therapeutic relationship. And if she needed to talk, maybe I could talk to her in life coaching, but not at Vibrant. And anybody comes in Vibrant or schedule an appointment with me, as soon as they walk in the front door, my picture is there along with Dr. Zakaria that says psychology associate, and she's the licensed psychologist. And when you come in, you have to fill out paperwork. It doesn't matter who it is. If you have an appointment, you fill out paperwork. So that's how she has paperwork. That's how she has everything. I walked out and I saw it was her. We talked. She was actually having some issues, and it was more on a personal level. It was not therapeutic. So when she say her insurance wasn't charged, it wasn't, because I could not engage in a therapeutic relationship with her. And I even suggested other therapists, and she sent me text messages asking me if I knew any other African-American therapists in the area. I told her no, but I would reach out and see if I could find someone. And I have that in text.
When you were meeting with RJ and you brought, he had been a prior client in your, in your coach life coaching. And then you're also seeing his ex-wife. Did Dr. Z know that?
Yes.
And did you document those conversations?
I didn't document the conversation, but I told him at the time he was going through something, and I did not want to leave him hanging to not have any resources. And I have text messages where he said that he couldn't find another therapist, so he pretty much was stuck with me. And I told him I was going over into supervision and that I had to get permission first for him to come over. Both Dr. Zakaria and the owner of the company agreed and said it was okay for me to have him come over because of the situation he was in at that time. And that dual relationships are not prohibited, but it's special circumstances. And I felt it was a special circumstances to allow him to come and see me at Vibrant Healthcare. But there was no documentation, but it was discussed and talked about that would be a dual relationship.
And with the with his ex-wife, was that, you were also counseling her?
Yes. She was in life coaching, and she also came to Vibrant after maybe two or three times after that.
And did you document the conflict there or the dual relationship?
I didn't document the dual relationship. She came over when he came over because it was on her insurance. So everybody just started seeing me there if they saw me.
And do you have your patients to your home?
Excuse me?
Have you had your patients come to your home for social events?
The dinner was, well, my home first. Yes, he has been to my house, and so has his fiance or new wife. That was prior to me seeing or her coming to my office, and that was during life coaching. He failed to share that he was in life coaching with me for quite some time. And with my life coaching, they have full access to me all the time. So shifting from life coaching and going over into therapy, it's kind of different. this person have access, they text you, they call you, they're on your Facebook, they're at your home, you're going to dinner, and then to bring him over at that moment to therapy, no boundaries were set. And I feel like it carried on more of a life coaching than it did a psychology relationship or therapeutic relationship. And I think that's where the waters got muddied, is not having those boundaries.
The board recently contacted you, unless you started working for another company and your name was on a website, on their website, stating that you're providing therapy.
No, I'm not working there. And it was iridescent. Okay. And she said that she mislabeled it when she was creating her website. And even though it says, or I'm listed under the tab that said therapist, which is now removed, when if you read my bio said life coaching. So that was just an error that I was under the tab that said therapy. But I told her, and she knows, because her and I have been in business or sharing an office for years. So she knew I was not a licensed psychologist or a therapist. And she said that it was a mistake, and she went and she changed it. And I told her just take it down completely because I'm not working there.
All right. Other questions from the board members? Dr. Flowers?
Yes. Thank you. Maybe I'm at the correct moment to ask her now. Wondering, Dr. Wiley, you mentioned you met with somebody there who you told you couldn't really give therapy to because she was more of a sorority sister than a client. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, though, I saw that there were actually notes regarding that, like consultation notes. So that confuses me. I mean, if somebody were to come to my office who's a buddy and I chat for a while, I don't do a consultation note. I just enjoy it and send them on their way. So I'm confused as to how there was a chart entry or two chart entries for her if there was no client relationship.
Okay. So whenever you schedule an appointment to come in, it automatically creates a record or a file or a folder for that person for that actual visit. And in order for that tab or to clear that, you have to put something in there. So it'll stay in a queue until it's cleared out. So to clear it out of the queue, I had to put something in there, even though it was just a consult. But the first one, I told him it was a consultation and that it was a conflict of interest. But you have to put something in there for that file to move out of the queue.
Okay, so if a friend drops in to say hello, do they have to have a consultation sheet on them?
No, they don't. But she actually made appointments.
Okay, that's
so
kind of...
So if a friend just came in to see me, then they didn't make an appointment or just book to talk to me. A friend just came in and they would call me up front. She actually made appointments after I said I could not see her in a therapeutic relationship.
Okay, seemed like maybe you could just tell whoever is scheduling to delete it and not have that issue, but that's kind of, you can't go back and undo that. But looking at the situation, as you know, psychologists and psychologist trainees are supposed to avoid multiple roles with clients. What we see, though, is that you were in a sorority with the ex-wife and fiance and provided some life coaching to RJ. Then you gave him services at Vibrant. You gave him information about a counselor who had an interest in him and also some social media contact with clients. Can you explain how that would be consistent with avoiding multiple roles with clients?
Well, it wasn't trying to avoid multiple relationships with clients. The only people that came over were, it was him, his wife, and his son. The new wife, well, the ex-wife, I'm sorry, but the new wife, I was not seeing her in that capacity. And they had the impression that me and the ex-wife were hanging out socially, which that's not true. If I had a function or if I was speaking on a panel or whatever occasion it was, they would come out to support me. And then at the end, I would always take pictures with my sorority sisters that showed up to the event. So by me taking pictures with her, I guess they assume that I'm having a social relationship with her, but that was totally outside of work and job. And that was in support of me speaking or me being on a panel or something of that nature.
Now, what was your understanding about, from what I understand, you've completed an internship and postdoctoral training and, but not licensed. What's your understanding about need for clinical supervision in your current status?
You said the need for it?
Well, do you feel you need it? And if so, what do you feel is needed to be basically lawful?
I answered to an ad that said psychology associate. So I just assumed, just like other positions I've had in that same role and capacity, is that I'm being supervised and I am doing the work and being checked on, having face-to-face, having different types of conceptualizations of cases and things of that nature. That didn't happen. So as a psychology associate, I was expecting that because that's what the role said in the job description. It gave me all the tasks that I'm responsible for, and it said while under the supervision of a licensed psychologist. And so I just expect it to be a supervisory type position.
Okay, otherwise you'd be supervised.
Mm-hmm. It says under supervision.
Okay, and do you feel that was appropriately provided?
No, I don't.
All right. Can you expand on that? I mean, what was unacceptable about it?
I think the lack of presence of Dr. Z being there. If I had a question, I had to either email or type, and it was very rare that we would have a sit-down discussion meeting or talk about any of my cases. It was always via electronics. And so I'm used to a supervision being like a face-to-face supervision where we're sitting down, we're going through my cases and things of that nature. And that didn't happen. But I wasn't very concerned because most of the patients that came in, I've been doing it for so long and I have so many hours of supervision doing it. I felt comfortable doing it. But even if they were there and I had an issue or a problem at that moment, I wouldn't have had a go-to person. I would have had to call or text. It wouldn't have been like I could step next door. And so the work environment wasn't what I expected. I expected her to be on site at all times, and she wasn't.
And did you discuss RJ and these other people, your interaction with them in regards to what we're talking about today?
No, because I never, until I got the complaint in the mail, I never knew it was an issue. They were still cordial, even up to the beginning of the year, still texting and everything else and being cordial. I had no idea, a clue that there was an issue or a problem at all. And RJ said that he started scheduling less, and that's not true. Actually, he started coming more, and he is the one that asked me to see JW. And he said, I know him, I know his history, I know everything about him, and he's already told her everything. And he feels like I would be a good person for her to talk to in order to get to know him or to, you know, guide them through their relationship issues. And if I was harming them or doing something so wrong and so bad, why did he keep coming? And why did he suggest she come? Why did he bring his son if I'm such a bad person or I'm carrying a weapon? I carry a weapon for protection. And he knows that. I don't carry my weapon in session. But whenever I'm leaving my office or if it's late night, I will carry my weapon. My mom was murdered and we don't have closure of who did it. And to protect myself, I carry my gun proudly. But to have it when people are in my office, that's not true. I put it on when I'm getting ready to leave.
Okay, I'm wondering specifically though with, you know, you talked to Dr. Zechariah about RJ and these other issues, or did not feel it reached the level that you need to discuss it with her?
That's what I'm saying. I didn't know it was an issue. I didn't know it was a problem. It was no arguing. It was nothing for me to report to her because I thought everything was fine. I had no clue that there was an issue or a problem at all.
Okay.
Until I got the paperwork out of the mailbox.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Malott? You're on mute, Dr. Malott.
Dr. Wiley, thank you for being here and for sharing. I know you said you were not aware it was an issue until the client, you know, you got the letter in the mail. But as a psychologist and as somebody, as a psychologist in training and as somebody who's gone through a doctoral program and been through supervision, as you said, you've had many, many, many hours of supervision. Mm-hmm. When we get into potential dual relationships, was there not a warning bell that struck?
It was a warning bell that struck, but because this was the only unique case like this, and I never had to deal with it, there was no discussion or talk about boundaries or how to move forward with it. So,
Did you reach out as a psychologist? Sometimes, you know, we may pose even hypothetical. I have students who call me years after they graduate, you know, I'm kind of concerned, should I reach out to your supervisor? Did anything like that strike you to, you know, reach out and seek guidance?
If it was an issue or a problem or I saw things escalating to be a problem, I would have reached out to her for supervision. But as far as her knowing and us talking about dual relationships, she asked me, do I know the difference between psychology and life coaching? And we had that conversation and I said, yes, I know, but it was not structured or it wasn't organized or talked about or discussed of how you move forward in this dual relationship. In all the hours that I have, I've never engaged in a dual relationship. This was a special situation where I muddied my own waters because I was trying to save a life. And if it wasn't for that, I had already said, you need to find you somebody else. You need to find you another therapist. But because he said he couldn't and didn't feel comfortable going to anyone else, I asked and I advocated for her to allow me to see him there because I felt he was in a bad place. And by him being in a bad place,
you advocated for your supervisor that you should see him.
Yeah, I told her, I think I could not leave him hanging. I could not just let him go through what he's going through and just say, okay, you deal with it. You worry about it yourself. I just didn't, even though I'm your life coach, okay, I can't help you anymore. Stop calling me. Don't come and see me. I couldn't do that in the position that he was in. And I tell people, I do it all over again, probably different. But if me bringing him over to psychology and muddying my waters saved him, then I'm okay with that. Am I okay with how it turned out or that I didn't let him go after I saw he was making progress and he was better? I blame myself for that. But for me to contact Dr. Z or to get supervision from her about his case, I didn't know it was an issue or a problem. They came to see me, they left. He's doing good, he's doing fine. There was never anything for me to think, oh, I need to consult Dr. Z about this until I got the packet in the mail.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Madam Chair, this is Dr. Gill.
Dr. Gill, please.
Thank you, Dr. Wiley, for being here. I just want to be clear. Did you make any physical threats against RJ or any other members of his family?
No, I have not made any threats. And for quite some time, I was off of Facebook because of them trolling my page and everything I post, regardless of what it is, they send it in and say that I'm talking about them. Or he made some comments about me and my IP address and things of that nature. I don't threaten anyone.
All right. And one of the concerns that I have in this case is that as a psychological associate or intern, you were seeing RJ, and at a certain point, RJ and his ex-wife, who was then his wife, at another point, you saw for consultation the fiance, and then you saw RJ and the son. And I realize you've made the argument for special circumstances, but given that, it appears to me that kind of care for multiple family members is beyond the ability of most therapists that are licensed to be able to handle that and manage that effectively without a lot of assistance, without other therapists that would provide services to the family members. I mean, you took that all on your own. And if I don't blame you entirely for this, I think that may be a supervisory issue to be sure. But do you have any comments on that? I think that's an overwhelming treatment to have to treat so many family members with all of the complications thereof. And I couldn't find any documentation to explain, the roles that each individual family members play in the treatment that you provided. And to me, it must have been extremely confusing, the treatment that was provided. Do you have a comment?
Yes. As I mentioned, I first start seeing them in life coaching. So it's more family oriented. It's more laid back. It's more, let's have a discussion. Let's talk. Let's figure it out. And so since I was seeing them already in life coaching and I went through the divorce with them, the main thing for me was to stay unbiased. And I did that. And so when they come to see me, it was not so much of interjecting to, talk about the other person. It was, how do I get past this point? What do I need to do? How can I, move on with my life? It wasn't so much of trying to bash people. Now, in life coaching, I still didn't bash people, but it was more with the text messages and things. It was a constant thing between the two of them. And so I offered my opinion on certain things if I was asking. That was life coaching. But when it came over to Vibrant, I don't understand or see where the problem started, where I would have had to be alarmed, because it's not like they came very often. They did not come like every week or every 2 weeks. It was random visits. So I had no reason to feel like it was going to be a big deal, because RJ had moved on and his ex-wife had moved on to totally separate lives. The only thing was the son that was in the middle, and that's the one that I feel like is hurting the most, because I received a text message from him saying that he really missed me, and he can't talk to me, and he's sorry for what his father is doing. And every time I talk to both of them, that is that's the common thing I talk about, is their sons. And so for him to say that I am harming his child, to then get a text message from his child saying that I'm the only person that he can talk to, that doesn't go. How did I hurt them? And where did the issue start that they felt that it was such a problem that I couldn't see all of them? I really feel it's a personal gripe, and I believe that they felt I was taking sides because I have the ability to be unbiased. And I told the ex-wife and I told the new wife, I'm not getting in the middle of that. Did I make certain comments? Yes, I did. But as far as taking sides or getting in the middle of that, I'm not on anybody's side. I'm there to do my job and go home. So for me to be the one that's suffering in all this when I was the one trying to bring everybody together, I don't understand.
I wonder, just as a final question, I wonder if you could explain to the board the role of a life coach, under what conditions you would refer for psychotherapy, and what is the boundary between them? And it sounds like that in certain cases you may have referred people that you might have seen for therapy back to life coaching. I'm not sure how the life coaching and the psychotherapy roles, how they play into each other, and whether that could account for some confusion on the part of the patients who are used to seeing you in a certain way and then find that they're in a different relationship with you, and do they understand the difference?
Mm-hmm. So when Dr. Sakaria left, I had 146 patients that I was seeing under her. So when she abruptly left, I could no longer see them because now I'm not supervised. And so I had people to come in and explain to them that I could not see them in a therapeutic relationship because I no longer had a supervisor. And it was the CEO's idea to see patients thereafter. Anybody that called or any new patients would come in and do life coaching, and I would explain to them life coaching is totally different than a therapeutic relationship. We are not doing treatment plans. We are not doing any diagnosing. And by the way, he had RJ had a pre-existing diagnosis. I did not diagnose him. He had a pre-existing diagnosis before he came to see me. I tell them the difference with me, with my life coaching, is my life coaching clients have access to me all the time, not just 9 to 5. So if they're in a situation at 6 or 7 at night and they need to talk or they are having a crisis, they can call me. But if I'm in a therapeutic relationship with them, they can't do that. As far as the type of services of a life coach, it's basically allowing people to vent and help guide them and instruct them on how to deal with a situation, get out of a situation, how to self-heal and not allow things to bother them. It's not anything to do with therapy as related to psychology. It's basically humans sitting down, having a conversation, and let's figure this thing out. With psychology, there's a treatment plan, there's a diagnosis, and if I feel like they need a psychiatrist, I refer them out to someone else.
And, you know, when you made these switch in roles where you were providing different services, did you document that? Did you, you know, certainly from a psychological standpoint, you're required to document, you know, and have progress notes and the like. And it would seem to me that when you make changes of this nature, that you would, it would be appropriate for you to document, you know, the differences in your goals in the treatment that you're providing, and that it's crystal clear to the people that you're treating, you know, how your role has changed. And the problem, if you do that only verbally, then it's hard to defend yourself later on if somebody makes a challenge that this was never communicated. So I'm wondering if you documented these changes in the roles that you're playing with these individuals who were patients at one point and clients at another.
Yes, I documented. And when they came to see me under life coaching, it was coded also as life coaching. So with life coaching, they had to pay cash. It wasn't insurance. It wasn't, you know, where they bill you or a copay. It was just a strict cost for life coaching. And so when they enter it into the system, it tags it to say life coaching. And life coaching, you have a choice of taking notes or entering notes or not. So with when it was time to take notes or do anything of that nature, I had handwritten notes, but I didn't have it in their system, because once it's in the system, as I mentioned to you guys before, it can't move on without a signature or an MPI number. So I left with, when I quit working, there was a ton that was just sitting in the queue, and they can't go anywhere because we don't have an insurance or an MPI number, and it was life coaching. But it did tag it as life coaching. And I explained thoroughly the difference, because it was a difference in price and it was a different in type of service.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Meyer?
Dr. Myers?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Thank you, Dr. Wiley. A few questions. In response to an earlier question, and I don't remember who asked it, but I believe you said it was JW that you just did consultation with. You never saw her as a client. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
The records, though, call her a patient and have a diagnosis for her, and say that you did CBT treatment. I don't understand how that's not a client.
And you are correct. I don't recall putting that in there, but I do recall putting a note in with, I don't remember a diagnosis or any of that. I don't have it in front of me. And for it to move through and go to insurance, there were times I didn't even put a code in. Someone would come behind me and put the code in and send it in. I did not charge her for her sessions. That's why it was not billed to her insurance. But there are situations where I didn't put anything, but someone else would come behind me and put stuff in or a code.
Okay. All right, a different topic. Do you still work for Vibrant?
No, I don't. I quit on January, I think, 20th or 21st.
Of 2020?
Yes.
Okay, and where do you work now?
I don't.
You're not currently practicing as a psychological associate or as a life coach?
I take life coaching clients here and there, but as far as a business or a job, no. Or psychology, no.
So through what agency do you provide life coaching?
My own company. I have a life coaching practice.
Which is, so what's the name of that?
I am Dr. Marilyn. Prior to that, it was MLZ Therapy.
Okay, so.
And Dr. Meyer, I apologize to interrupt, but I just want to clarify that one of the concerns, which was notated in the report, was that when we started this investigation, the life coaching business was called MLZ Therapy. And when I perused the website, the consent documents talked about counseling. So it sounds like from Dr. Wiley's indication, she has since changed the name, but I was unaware of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the name has changed. Is it still the same business?
No, it's not. I am revamping the whole thing, the whole system. And as far as the therapy part and the counseling part that was mentioned in MLZ Therapy, that was because when I first created the business, I was going in business with someone that was a licensed therapist. So when the website was built, it was built for the both of us. And at the end, the person didn't come through and didn't want to go into the business. And so I never changed the name. So I just recently changed the name after all of this that's going on, and I'm revamping the whole page and taking out the forms and everything. But that was set up for more than one person.
But you're the only person mentioned on this. There's no other mention of another name. It looks to me like it's all referencing you.
Yes, because I created the business.
Wouldn't you want to mention your partner that would be actually doing the therapy and the psychological services?
No.
Okay.
I have another business now, and everybody that's a part of it is not included.
On the website? But
no. As I mentioned, the person
from looking at this website, you are portraying yourself as providing psychological services. There's there's no mention of any other provider. It's you're the only person mentioned, and it says you're doing therapy, you're doing psychological evaluations. Is that correct?
No, that was not for me. The way the page was set up, yes, that's correct. But was I doing any of that? No, I was not. I was providing life coaching.
Okay, and this gets back to Dr. Gill's question about the distinction between providing psychological services and providing life coaching. I don't see how any of your clients could understand the distinction between those roles. And to just switch billing and continue working with them in the same agency, saying, well, I don't have supervision now, so we're just going to do life coaching.
No. When they sign up for life coaching, they get a packet, and in that packet, it explains to them what life coaching is. My whole program, and it's included in my packet that I sent to the board that shows the paperwork that I use when I get clients for life coaching. Those are not psychology papers. It was two separate things. One was forms. One was mine were hard copy. And I gave it to them in the hand, and I sent it to the board, and it clearly explains what life coaching is.
And Dr. Myers,
that's what we talk about, life coaching.
And Dr. Meyer, if I may clarify, Dr. Wiley did send that blank information from her life coaching business. However, I did send a subpoena for the complainant's life coaching records to clarify what services were provided. And Dr. Wiley did respond indicating that she no longer had those records. She may be able to provide more clarification on to what happened to those records. But we do not have the complainant's life coaching records here today because of that.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So Dr. Wiley, are there records for the current claimants with your life coaching explanation and documentation?
No.
And why is that?
Because my computer crashed with all of my notes on it, and I sent the receipt and everything and the date that it crashed, and I lost everything.
Okay, thank you.
I tried to retrieve it, and I could not. I went to Geek Squad. They couldn't get it, so I lost all my records, and actually it crashed twice. But the first time, it took all my stuff away.
Okay. So the final question I have is about the supervision that you were receiving at Vibrant. You were hired as a psychological associate. You have a current application with the board. Mm-hmm. Where does the responsibility lie for making sure that you are receiving the supervision that you need?
I think it lies on both parties.
Okay, what actions did you take to seek out supervision and obtain the required supervision under Arizona statute?
I went to my CEO and I complained. And I told him that she's never there, and if I needed her, I had to call, which was another issue.
When did you do that?
I'm not sure the date.
Can you give me a...
I did it several times. I did it more than one time.
Okay.
Did you do it in writing or How did you do it? Sorry to interrupt.
Well, I talked to him freely, so I would discuss it when we talk or have meetings. I would discuss it with him. And I also wrote up something, I think maybe one email, or I did a complaint that I never turned in, and I showed him my complaint. And at that moment, he told me that I could not reach out to her because of the lawsuit and everything else that's going on. So he told me that it's the employees can't talk to her. So I didn't get a chance to sit down and talk to her before I submitted the complaint to the board, which in the ethics, it says you should at least sit down and try to talk with the person before you file the complaint. You should do it informally. So she was never there, never in the office. And then by the time I was ready to tell her how I wanted her to be there more, I was told I could not communicate with her.
Can I jump in real quick, Dr. Wiley? Wasn't that after she had already left the organization?
No, I didn't turn it in at all.
I know, but you drafted that letter. When did you draft it? Wasn't she already left?
No, it was before she left. I drafted it before she left.
Right before she left?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a matter of what?
I had been working and drafting and putting stuff on the letter, but I didn't date it or feel like I really wanted to put it in until some things happened that I felt like, okay, enough is enough.
Okay.
It's been over time because I've been complaining for quite some time.
Sorry, Dr. Myers, go ahead.
No, absolutely. So can you just give me the dates of when you worked at Vibrant?
May of 2000. I want to say, I think I started October 2017.
October 17 to January 2020.
That's correct, for almost two and a half years.
Okay, and when did Dr. Z leave?
She left in September of 2019. I believe it was September 12th.
Thank you. So for 2 years... You worked at Vibrant for 2 years under Dr. Z's supervision, but never, it took two full years to address your concerns about the level of supervision you were receiving.
I didn't become full-time there until the last year. I was working two other jobs and only working part-time there. And the times that I went in, she was there more, and we were also doing a training every Thursday prior to that. So I was not a full-time person at Vibrant 2 years straight.
Okay.
I had two other jobs.
Did you have regularly scheduled supervision with anyone?
No.
And was that a concern to you?
No, not at the time, because I wasn't really there. But when I was there full-time, I was expecting her to be there or for us to do face-to-face, because when I did, I scheduled my patients on days that she would be in the office at Vibrant, so I never had the issue prior to me becoming full-time.
Okay, so you became full-time when?
I think it was May of 18.
Okay, so a year.
Maybe a little bit later than that.
So at least over a year, you were full-time, but mm-hmm. never had scheduled supervision. How often did you meet with your supervisor?
Well, first, it was a new company, so I really didn't have any patients for quite some time. I was just there.
I thought you were already there for part-time for over a year.
I did. Those were scheduled patients that I just dropped in to see. Or they scheduled an appointment, and I would go in to see those patients. It was not a full caseload until after I got there full time. That's when it picked up. There were several days.
At that point, how often did you receive supervision?
I did not receive face-to-face supervision every week. it was randomly when Dr. Z dropped in, I can't give you a number and I can't count it. But as far as me and her sitting down doing supervision, that didn't happen.
Is there a requirement for a certain amount of supervision as a psychological associate?
I don't know.
Okay. I would suggest you look into that. I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Myers. Any further questions?
I'd like to call for an executive session. There's something I want to clarify with Ms. Galvin.
We have a motion for an exec session. Is there a second?
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we're going to call. We need to call the executive session phone number. If you need that, let Heidi or Jennifer know. And we're going
to. I have an email queued up to send out right now for everyone to have it.
So we need to put our video on. We need to take our face off. So turn off the video and turn off your and also mute. Make sure you mute.
And everyone, be sure that you're in a place that can ensure the confidentiality of the discussions.